Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to today's conference titled Stock Market Outlook 2022, presented by Chuck Carlson, Chief Executive Officer and Portfolio Manager for Horizon Investment Services. At the end of the presentation, we will have a Q&A session. If you have a question, you can send an email with question in the subject line to ask@horizoninvestment.com. You may send this email at any time during the program. Again, that's ask@horizoninvestment.com. With that, let's get started. Welcome, Chuck.
Thank you, Shalane, and thank you, everyone, for attending our latest in series of audio conferences provided by Horizon Investment Services. Today, we will cover a number of topics. First, we'll give you kind of a macro market outlook, where we are now, where we think the market can be heading toward the end of the year and then into 2022. And from that macro, we'll get down to the micro. We'll talk about areas of the market that in 2022 present some interesting opportunities. We'll discuss things that really bear watching into 2022, especially as they pertain to the biggest risks for the market, which I think one of the biggest risks continues to be and not just inflation, but stagflation, and we'll talk a little bit about that going forward. And then finally, we'll talk about some mistakes that investors should not be making in 2022, and these are mistakes that you should never make regardless of the year, but there'll be probably extra incentive to maybe do these things in 2022, and we would recommend that you don't. And then finally, we'll name some names. We'll give you some names of some of our favorite ideas right now that should work well in 2022, and then we'll wrap it up with questions. And as Shalane mentioned, if you have a question that you would like us to address, send that to us via email at ask@horizoninvestment.com. With that, let's look at the current market environment. It is hard not to be bullish on stocks right now, especially if you follow things like the Dow Theory. The Dow Theory, as many of you know, looks at the performance of the Dow Jones Transportation Average and Dow Jones Industrial Average, and from the movement of those two averages discerns whether the market's primary trend is bullish or bearish. Good news on the Dow Theory front here recently, when we had both the Dow Jones Industrial Average and Dow Jones Transportation Average both going to new all-time highs here in the last week or so. That's a positive, obviously, under the Dow Theory and confirms the previous bullish trend that had been occurring. So from a Dow Theory perspective, you cannot read this market as anything but in a bull market trend. And when you look at other factors that go into, you know, a market outlook, those are pretty positive as well. For example, it's not just the Dow Jones Transportation and Industrial Averages that are moving to new all-time highs, but the S&P 500, which is a measure used by a lot of folks, including professional investors, that has gone to a new all-time high. And then when you look and start to divide up the market a little bit, the Russell 2000 small cap index recently went to a new all-time high, and some of the mid-cap indices as well went to new all-time high. So it's just not the big boys that are moving higher. It is a nice breadth in the market across, you know, small cap and mid cap. So that type of breadth really needs to be respected. I know there are a fair amount of folks out there, and when we talk to them from time to time, who, you know, get nervous when markets are doing what they're doing now. And that's not the worst thing in the world, quite frankly. And, you know, from the standpoint of markets climbing that cliche wall of worry, it's a good thing that you have concern about the market out there, because that still means that there is a bit of a wall of worry there, and that's good for stocks. But, you know, again, looking at the breadth, looking at important indices, and looking at just what has been happening in the market, it is tough not to be optimistic about the momentum in this market, momentum that should be able to carry through during what is typically a seasonally strong period toward the end of the year, of last quarter, and into 2022. If you break the macro market down even further and you look at those three primary engines that drive sustained moves in the market, and you're probably sick of me talking about these if you've been on any of our previous audio conferences, but those three main engines are corporate profits, interest rates, and inflation. Those are the three primary engines of sustained market moves. And when you look at those, you find that interest rates are still favorable for equities. Interest rates have popped up, but they've been coming back down here in the last week or so. The 10-year Treasury is now at about 1.44, so that's well off its annual high of about 1.7 and change. So interest rates are still very favorable compared to equities. And what interest rates do is price the attractiveness of alternatives to stocks. Obviously, if interest rates are high, there's more of a pull on investors to put their money in things like fixed income investments and money market funds and things like that. When interest rates are very, very low, that pull is much less there. The competition for equities is much less there. So interest rates are important from that standpoint. Those are still certainly in the favorable area. Maybe they'll trend more toward neutral at some point if, in fact, inflation starts to run hot and rates go higher, and perhaps some Fed tightening may boost rates. But at this point, when you're looking at, you know, the average 10-year Treasury bond over the last 27 years, the average yield is 3.8%, and we're about 1.4% right now. Interest rates are still in that bullish side of the ledger. You look at corporate profits. Corporate profits are still on the bullish side of the ledger. We're coming off what turned out to be a very strong third quarter corporate earnings performance, much better than expectations. And I think that's been one of the drivers of recent stock action as well. We've got companies not just beating revenue and earnings estimates, the vast majority of companies, quite frankly, but also their guidance into the end of the year and in some cases into 2022 has been pretty good. So, you know, earnings comparisons will become more difficult as we move forward and into 2022, and that will be a challenge for the market, are those earnings comparisons, which will be getting tougher and tougher. Nevertheless, at this point, you still have to put corporate earnings on the bullish side of the ledger. So you've got interest rates and corporate profits on the bull side of things. That third engine, inflation, is the one that's kind of the potential fly in the ointment. You've got, certainly inflation has been running hot. In some measures, the hottest inflation that we've seen in 30 years. Wage inflation is running at between 4% and 5%. Producer price, consumer price is on a number of goods and services has been running pretty hot as well. Obviously, if inflation does continue to run and gains momentum, that is going to be a significant headwind for stocks. Stocks are not a great inflation hedge, but nor are most asset classes. I know people point to gold as being a great inflation hedge, but I think history shows that it ain't that great either, and bonds certainly. And so inflation is a tough nut from an investment standpoint because it is fairly devastating on most asset classes. Right now, I think the market still has confidence, given the way it has been behaving, given the way interest rates have been behaving, that maybe not all of this inflation, but a pretty good chunk of this inflation is going to be transitory. In other words, a lot of the inflation right now is supply-demand inflation, where there's just the demand is too great for the supply. There isn't enough supply because of supply chain issues, et cetera. Those have a way of working themselves out over time. Now, it may take through the first half of 2022, but again, the market being forward-looking will start to react if, in fact, it believes that the inflation story is going to be less impactful on stocks. And again, at this point, given the way that the broad market has performed, given the way that interest rates have been performing, the market still has a certain comfort level with the current inflation rate and thinking that perhaps you're going to see that rate plateau here pretty quickly and start to tail off as we get toward the end of the year and into 2022. The big thing to watch from an inflation standpoint in the market is wage inflation, in my opinion. And that has been running pretty hot. And that is the one factor on the inflation side that does concern us a bit, in the sense that, you know, once you start seeing wage inflation running consistently month to month at that 5% plus level, that is going to be a headwind for the market. It's going to be a significant headwind for the market. We're not there yet. And there are some indications that perhaps some of the wage pressure may start to loosen up. The jobs report, for example, in October was pretty strong. I think you're going to continue to see more people coming back into the job market, and I'm not sure that will continue to pressure wages at that 5% plus level. So that is something, though, that bears watching. There are a few things that really bear watching in 2022. A big one is that wage inflation. Yes, we have been running around the 5% level in the last few months. If that continues through the remainder of this year into 2022, that is going to be a significant headwind for the market. I don't think that is what we're going to see, but that is something that's certainly worth watching. The other issue worth watching is the Dow Jones Transportation Average, which is an index that's always worth watching. Unfortunately, a lot of investors do not, and a lot of professional investors do not, and the media does not. But again, the Dow Jones Transportation Average is one of the most significant averages there is in its relation to economic sensitivity. It's an excellent barometer for future interest, for future economic activity. So you always want a Dow Jones Transportation Average doing well, because that gives you a window into the future economy. If in fact you run into periods where there's divergence between what the Dow Transports and the Dow Industrials are doing, that can potentially be a negative for the economy and therefore a negative for the future market. So another thing to be watching pretty carefully in 2022 is the action of the Dow Jones Transportation Average. Recent action has been very solid. We had a significant breakout to a new all-time high in the Dow Transports. That's very bullish under the Dow theory. And as long as you can continue to see decent performance from those transports, I think that gives a pretty good barometer on future economic activity and thus kind of takes the big negative off the table. And that big negative is something called stagflation. Stagflation is basically a period of declining economic activity and rising inflation. And that is probably the worst of all possible worlds for investments. And to me, you know, that is the big looming ugly out there for the market. Fortunately, the action of the transports and the action of interest rates seems to be taking that stagflation option off the table for now, but that is something to watch, and the kind of the canary in that coal mine will be the Dow Jones Transportation Average and how it is performing and giving you a window into what future economic activity is going to be. The other factor, there's two more factors that kind of give me solace about this market in terms of its ability to sustain its momentum, certainly going into 2022. One of the factors that we use, an indicator, to kind of give us a snapshot of the market's popularity, and is something called the intermediate potential risk. And basically what this indicator looks at is the percentage of stocks on the New York Stock Exchange that are trading above their 200-day moving average. And it's an excellent tool to kind of give you some perspective on just how popular stocks are. And the thinking is the more and more and more popular stocks are, the more and more and more the bullish sentiment is, but the more likely that you are at least approaching, if not at, a short-term top in the market. Conversely, when you have very few stocks that are trading above this 200-day moving average, it's an indication that investors are fairly gloomy and doomy, and that can oftentimes coincide with a bottom in the market. Right now, the intermediate potential risk indicator going into today was about 65%. In other words, about two-thirds of the stocks on the New York Stock Exchange were trading above this 200-day moving average. Now, that is an elevated level. However, it is typically not a level that you would associate with significant market tops. Typically, that percentage will get well into the 70s and oftentimes into the 80 percentile range before you see the type of sentiment that oftentimes signals market tops. So here we have a situation where the broad market's doing well. You have the Dow Theory that's bullish. You have other indices such as the small cap Russell 2000, mid cap S&P 400, all doing quite well. And you have this intermediate potential risk indicator that is elevated, as you would expect with strong upward moves in the indices, but not at a level that typically coincides with significant market declines. So, you know, to me, that there's more room that indicator can go on the upside before you start to see a significant top forming, either on a short-term or a long-term basis. So I think that's a positive for the current market environment and the market environment going into 2022. And then finally, you know, there's a lot written about this market being exceptionally overvalued, that when you look at the valuations of stocks, you know, they're very, very high, and that is one of the bearish arguments for this market, is just valuations are very extended. I'm not sure the evidence really indicates that. Yes, there are certain sectors, certain pockets, certain individual stocks that valuations are extremely stretched. But when you look at the market in a broad sense, and when I'm using a broad sense, I'm looking at the S&P 1500 index. The S&P 1500 index consists of the S&P 500 large cap, the S&P 600 small cap, and the S&P 400 mid cap indices. So it's 1500 stocks representing large, mid, and small. When you break down that S&P 1500 index and look at the individual stocks, what you see is a market that is maybe only a tad overvalued. For example, the average stock in the S&P 1500 right now trades at 23 times its trailing earnings. That's only about 7% higher than the norm since 1994. So when you go back and look at that normal level, we're only modestly above that. And if you look at the median PE, in other words, the number that divides the stocks into two equal numbered groups, if you look at the median PE on an S&P 1500 index, the level is closer to 19, which is only about 4% higher than the norm. So that median PE of around 19 is only 4% higher. So while you have these pockets of extreme overvaluations, when you're looking at the broad index, things aren't as toppy, aren't as overvalued as you think. For example, 28%, so over, you know, more than one in four of the stocks in the S&P 1500 has a trailing PE ratio of less than 14. The 27-year norm has been 23%. So we actually have more stocks on a percentage basis in the S&P 1500 that are trading at a PE ratio of less than 14, which is a pretty modest PE ratio. That's lower than the 27-year term. And then finally, when you look at the dividend yield on the S&P 1500, right now the dividend yield on the S&P 1500 is about 1.4%. That is only slightly below the 27-year norm of 1.5%. So another way to kind of look at this valuation question is looking at the relative dividend yield. And right now, the relative dividend yield on the S&P 1500 is just modestly below its 27-year norm. And I might add, it's during a time when the 10-year Treasury is only yielding 1.4%. When its 27-year norm is 3.8%. So you've got this period of very low interest rates, which typically would make a dividend yield even more attractive at 1.4% on a valuation basis, and that's what we have right now. So, you know, when you look at the numbers here and look at the broad market across both large, mid, and small, what you see is not necessarily this overly valued story that is being pumped a lot in the media and by others on Wall Street. In fact, it's you know, only slightly in some cases overvalued, and you can make some cases where it's about the same as the norm has been for the last 27 years. So I think that's another factor that tips to the side of being bullish in this scenario. So, you know, when you sum that up and you look at the market environment right now, as well as toward the end of the year and going into 2022, I think there are reasons to remain bullish on the market. I think that, you know, you've got broad-based strength across large, mid, and small. You've got the three engines, with inflation being maybe the one negative, the other two, interest rates and corporate profits, still on the bullish side of the ledger. You've got an intermediate potential risk indicator that's elevated but not to the levels that generally coincide with significant market tops. And then you have valuation measures that kind of point to a market that's maybe a slightly overvalued, still kind of reasonably valued when you're looking at 27-year norms. I think that all points to being more positive on the market than bearish on the market. So, you know, it's a decent outlook as we go toward the end of the year and then into 2022 for the broad market. When we think about the micro aspects of the market in 2022, some things that come to mind that are worth considering. One is this whole notion of, in 2022, is this going to be a growth market or a value market? And that has really been the question a lot of investors have been asking themselves over the last several years. And the answer has been basically a growth market. Growth markets, growth stocks have been pretty handily beating value stocks for the last five-year period. Over the last 12 months, it's been kind of neck and neck between growth and value. Year-to-date, growth has taken on a little bit more of a lead over value here more recently. So is it going to be a growth versus a value market? You know, what we try to do is not necessarily place a big bet on either side of that because it's going to be difficult, I think, to pull people out of growth stocks. Yes, you will see certain periods of declines, and we have seen some of this rotational correction over the last 12 months in and out of certain sectors, in and out of certain groups, and that may continue. But while I think growth stocks will still curry favor because, in fact, that is investors, a large constituency of investors, still want growth, and they'll find it in those growth stocks. Now, where growth stocks could be hit and hit pretty severely gets back to this inflation story. Inflation and rising interest rates will be especially harmful to growth stocks because, you know, growth stocks being growth stocks, people buy them for their future growth prospects. If in an inflationary environment those future growth prospects are downgraded, investors are going to be willing to pay less. And by paying less, that means earnings multiples shrink up, stock prices shrink up, and growth stocks come down. So where growth stocks probably have their greatest risk is on this inflation story. If inflation, in fact, starts to accelerate and it's accompanied by rising interest rates, that is going to be a massive headwind for the broad market, but it's going to be especially detrimental to growth stocks. Interestingly, we haven't seen that, which is one more indicator that perhaps the inflation story the market is comfortable with, because if, in fact, the market was concerned about inflation, you know, 3 to 6 months going into 2022, well into 2022, they would start to be really bombing some of these growth stocks in a big way, in a large macro way. And that has not been the case. There has been a little bit of a slowdown in certain growth segments, but by and large, we have not seen the pasting across growth sectors that you would expect to see if inflation, in fact, was going to be a huge problem. So I think in 2022, if you held a gun to my head and said, is it going to be a growth or is it going to be a value, I think value probably will have a slight advantage to growth stocks in 2022. But I would not make a huge bet in either way, and I would like to sprinkle portfolios with both growth stocks and value stocks because I think both will have good potential. Select growth stocks and select value stocks will have potential in 2022. Another sector that I know is near and dear to a lot of listeners' hearts are dividend-paying stocks. And what does 2022 hold for dividend-paying stocks? I think the big key in 2022 for dividend-paying stocks is to have a good focus on dividend growth and maybe a little bit of less of a focus on dividend yield. If, in fact, we have a period of rising interest rates. Rising interest rates will be a little bit more tough on higher yielding stocks. And we've seen a little bit of that already with some of the sluggishness in the action of the utility stocks here over the last few months. So in an environment of rising interest rates, that is a bit of a headwind for high yielding dividend stocks. However, dividend growth stocks provide you one of the things that you really like to see in an environment of rising inflation, and that is an ability to boost your cash flow. That's what dividend growth will do. You increase the dividend cash flow by owning companies that are boosting their dividends, and that is a way to hedge or fight against inflation. So I think given the potential inflation story for 2022, I think the emphasis should be on dividend growth stocks as opposed to higher yielding stocks. I think the dividend growth stocks will outperform the yielding stocks in 2022, and a little bit later on in this discussion, we'll give you some ideas on some dividend growth stocks that I think can do well in 2022. As we go into 2022, what sectors do I think can continue to perform? I think the environment should be conducive for financials to continue to do well. Financials offer still decent valuations, in many cases decent dividend yields, but also dividend growth potential. And I think that the yield curve will be such in 2022 that it should work to the favor of financials. I think select tech continues to have appeal. Interestingly, when you look at the technology sector, for example, it's the tech sector as a group trades at a discount to its 27-year norm based on a trailing PE ratio. So in other words, when you look at the PE ratios of the technology sector as a group, they're trading at a discount to its 27-year norm. So certainly there are some technology stocks that are extremely overvalued, but in the main, again, don't paint with such a broad brush, and I think there's going to continue to be opportunities in the tech sector, in the communications sector as well, for some of these stocks that are growing at very nice rates that you can still buy at decent prices. So I think those are two groups that have some merit for 2022. What are some mistakes that investors should avoid in 2022? I think number one, and this is a big mistake that I see investors do time and time and time again, and it's something that is very tempting to do, but I would caution you not to do it. In 2022, you're going to have a pretty big pool to do it, and that is don't let politics drive your investment program. In 2022, being an election year, as we get toward the end of that year, there's going to be a lot of attention on politics, and more so than now, if you can believe that. And it is always a tendency for investors to try to drive an investment program, make investment decisions based on this political prism. I have never seen it work, regardless of which party is in power or which party is moving into power, and regardless of where your political preferences lie, just don't do it. At the end of the day, what drives markets in a sustained way are interest rates, inflation, and corporate profits. Now, can politics and policies have an impact on that? They can. But to try to guess that ahead of time, especially in a political environment that is so divided and is very difficult to handicap in terms of what policies will or won't get through, it's a fool's errand to do it. So don't let politics drive your investment program. Second point, and this is kind of related, is don't let taxes dominate your investment decision process. There's been a lot of written and rhetoric concerning taxes and how taxes are going to be coming around and impacting, and what tax rates are going to go up, and what's going to happen to capital gains, and what about that stepped up cost, and estate planning, and is the estate going to drop in terms of the exemption? All those issues, and they always come up during kind of political hot years. And they're going to be a big issue here for the next several months and into 2022. At the end of the day, taxes can matter. But I have seen it so many instances where investors let taxes become the sole guide to whether they hold or sell a stock or buy more stock or whether they do this or whether they do that. And ultimately, while nobody, I'm sure, enjoys paying taxes, you really need to let the investment merit of the security be the ultimate driver of the investment decision. And it, I know it's tempting, I know, but I have seen it come back to harm investors too many times. Is while it matters and it can be included in the investment decision, at the end of the day, it should not be the sole reason why you're doing what you're doing with your investment portfolio. And again, there will be a big pull on that in 2022 to make decisions based on expectations of what might happen to taxes. And part of the problem with that, quite frankly, is that even if you're right for that particular year, you know, if you have regime change in Washington, you know, in 2 years or in 4 years, and the tax policies change then, and then you have another shift 4 years later and the tax policies change, it's always a moving target. And that's why it's very difficult and not prudent to base investment decisions purely on taxes, because it's you know, the rules of the game can change every 2 to 4 years. So the best thing to do is consider it in the equation. Maybe it's a tiebreaker if you're thinking of holding or selling a stock. But at the end of the day, and my experience has been that let the investment merit really drive, be the ultimate driver of the investment decision. And then finally, the mistake in 2022 that I think a lot of people will make, especially going into the year, is don't let the past dictate your future. In other words, there is a law written now that says we can't possibly have a good year in 2022 because 2021 has been so good. And, you know, not just 2021, but the last, you know, since 2010 has been such a good period in the market that you can't possibly have another good year in 2022. And it's based basically on the fact that 2021 and the previous years have been so strong. Don't drive an investment program looking at your rearview mirror. If, in fact, the primary engines of the market are net bullish, if, in fact, we're seeing broad-based strength in the market, if valuations are still reasonable, if investor sentiment hasn't gone over the top, you know, those things will push a market higher in 2022. Yes, do I think that we can see a duplicate of the performance that we had in 2021? That would be, it'd be nice, but that would be very challenging to see that. Can we see certainly a positive year? Absolutely. Can we see a year that's in line with historical standards of 7 to 10%? Absolutely. So I would not write off those things if in fact just because 2021 has been so strong. And finally, something to consider for 2022, and this gets back to kind of the sector areas. One sector that investors should be looking at pretty attractively for 2022, I think, are small and mid-cap stocks. The Russell 2000 Small Cap Index, if you pull up a chart of that and look at it, that had traded in a very narrow range from May basically through November. You had basically a sideways motion back and forth in a very narrow channel until you had this breakout recently. Such breakouts typically have legs, and when I mean legs, I mean they typically last 3, 6, 9, 12 months. And so we're going into 2022 with a strong breakout in small cap and in mid-cap stocks. And we're also going into 2022 not just with a breakout in those stocks, but with those stocks still trading at pretty attractive valuations relative to the historical norms and really good attractive valuations relative to, say, large-cap stocks. So one of the things that you want to do in your portfolios is not ignore small and mid-cap stocks in your portfolios. You know, whether that's doing individual stocks, whether that's buying a, you know, an exchange traded fund that focuses on small caps or mid caps. But I think 2022 will be a year when you would be glad that you had broad based exposure, not just a large cap, but small and mid cap. So keep that in mind as we go into 2022. Finally, I'm going to give you some names, some ideas. These are stocks that we and our clients at Horizon Investment Services do have in portfolios, and they're stocks that I think are situated nicely for 2022. So the first stock is Chubb, C-H-U-B-B, Chubb. Stock symbol is C-B. Stock trades for $193 a share. Chubb is an insurance company, and a portion of their business, an important portion, is they cater to property and casualty insurance and into kind of an affluent market segment. The company has a dividend yield of about 1.7%, so it has a premium yield to the S&P 1500. But Chubb also will post, or should post, pretty good dividend growth. The company has increased its dividend, its annual dividend, for 28 consecutive years, and I expect that trend to continue for the company. The stock has been performing well, but I think it's still, I don't want to say it's an under-the-radar stock, but it's not necessarily a sexy stock and one that we think can put up nice total returns in 2022. The second stock that I'll mention is LKQ. The symbol is LKQ. LKQ trades for $57 a share. It is a company that specializes in replacement auto parts. And I think that's a pretty nice business to be in right now, as people extend the life of their autos, partly because auto prices on new cars have been very high, and actually auto prices for used cars have been even higher in some instances. So people are trying to get more wear and tear out of their current vehicles. LKQ is a nice way to play that theme. The stock yields 1.8%, so it's another stock with a premium dividend yield to the S&P 1500, but I think you'll also see the company register pretty decent dividend growth as well. So it gives you that dividend growth that's necessary in 2022. So that's LKQ, symbol LKQ, trades for $57. The third stock I'll mention is one of those technology stocks that we still believe offers good value. That's Alphabet. The symbol is G-O-O-G-L, Google, G-O-O-G-L. The stock trades a hair under $3,000 per share. And as an aside, I know that $3,000 per share price, people are going, well, how am I going to buy that? Well, there are a number of ways now to that investors can get expensive stocks into portfolios. There are a number of online brokerage firms, for example, that will buy fractional shares of stock. Alphabet has what's called a direct purchase program that allows investors to invest directly with Alphabet via their transfer agent to buy stock in pieces. So, you don't necessarily have to go out and buy 10 shares of Alphabet at $3,000 a pop. We like the stock. It's a stock that has very good growth potential in 2022, and you can still buy that growth at what we believe are reasonable valuations. So that is a tech stock / communications stock that we feel can produce very well in 2022. The fourth stock I'll mention is Qualcomm. Q-C-O-M is the symbol. Qualcomm, it trades for $166 a share. Qualcomm is a player in the chip business. They're a major player in 5G-related semiconductors, both in technology as well as chips. But what I'm excited about with the company is that it has really been broadening out its universe of users now, where via the growth in the Internet of Things, in automotive, they really are vastly expanding their client base. And this latest quarter really indicated that. And the stock jumped significantly on the latest earnings report to what I think is a very nice breakout, and one that hopefully can continue. Qualcomm has a dividend yield of about 1.6%. So again, that premium dividend yield to the S&P 1500. And I think you're going to get above trend dividend growth with Qualcomm. So you're going to get that dividend growth, decent dividend yield, but it's also a company that is transforming itself in ways that I think Wall Street will continue to like and will enhance its growth potential. The last stock I'll mention is a utility company. I know a lot of people on the call tend to like utility stocks for their income. One of our favorite utility stocks is Ottertail. Ottertail, the symbol is OTTR. And the stock trades for $66 a share. The yield on it is a little low for a utility. It's about 2.4%, but I think that yield reflects Ottertail's growth potential versus other utilities. And one of the drivers of that growth is the company's non-utility business. Ottertail provides utility services in the upper Midwest and Minnesota, North Dakota, and South Dakota. But the company also has fairly extensive non-utility businesses in manufacturing and in plastics, and those areas seem to be giving a nice boost to the stock. So for a growth utility, one where I think you're going to see above-trend dividend growth, and one that has been behaving quite well, actually, Ottertail, symbol OTTR, is a solid play in that sector. If anybody listening to the call today would like further information about Horizon Investment Services and our money management services, we would love to chat with you. The phone number here for Horizon is 800-711-7969. That's 800-711-7969. And Horizon manages a variety of accounts in terms of we can manage trust accounts, IRAs, individual accounts, joint accounts, etc. And we have a variety of portfolio strategies that we use to meet the client's needs in terms of what they're looking for from an investment objective. So we would welcome you to call and ask us questions and to see if you feel that you need help, especially going into 2022 when it's a good time. We're getting to that time when it's good to kind of get your ducks lined up in a row. We would love to chat with you. That phone number is 800-711-7969. And with that, I will jump now to questions from everyone. And I appreciate the questions that have been sent in. And I will go through these and see if we can cover all of them here in the fairly short period of time we have left. Question number one, how will President Biden's two infrastructure bills impact next year's market, assuming they both pass? Well, it looks like the first infrastructure bill is going to get signed into law, and I think that probably will have a reasonable positive impact over maybe the next couple of years on certain segments of the market. Yeah, those companies that are doing a lot in the infrastructure side, the hard infrastructure side, whether that's in, you know, hardening up the utility lines, improving our bridges and our highways and so forth, you know, that will have a positive, I think, impact on a number of those sectors. I'm not so sure how it'll impact the broad economy. It may add a couple of ticks to GDP over the next 2 to 3 years. I wouldn't say it's going to be a game changer, but it certainly will have, you know, a positive impact on some of those cyclical sectors where, you know, quite frankly, a lot of value stocks like to hang out. It should help them. The passage of the second infrastructure or the social infrastructure bills, I am not optimistic that will have much, if any, impact, positive impact on the economy. And what concerns me a little bit there is, you know, how is that going to be paid for, and if in fact it's paid for with a fairly aggressive tax changes, especially on corporations, I'm not convinced that's going to be something that's going to be helpful to the economy. I would not necessarily alter an investment program one way or the other on either of these infrastructure bills, quite frankly, but in terms of their impact on the economy, I don't think they're going to be big needle movers, especially the second one, which actually might have some detrimental effects depending on how it's going to get paid for. Second question, as we approach 2022, what would you recommend to a 60 to 75-year-old client who would like to rebalance their portfolio? How much in large cap, small cap, international, et cetera? Now, this is a question that I'm hesitant to answer only because not all 60 to 75-year-olds are the same. And I think it's something that's done all too often in our business is to basically take and lump together all people by their ages. And as you all know, there are 75-year-olds out there that, have no financial responsibilities. Their house is paid for. Their kids are gone and grown up, and they're in good health. And then there are 75-year-olds that still have a lot of financial responsibilities, and their kids left, and now they're back, and the health could be better. And so it's tough to really, there is no one size fits all. A benchmark that some folks like to use, and I view it more as kind of a starting point, and I think it tends to be a bit on the conservative side, is subtract your age from 110, and that is a benchmark for the amount of equity that you should have. So a 75-year-old minus 110 would be about, 35% in equities. I think that's a starting point, a benchmark. I don't think it's an end-all, be-all. In fact, I think it's probably too conservative, quite frankly, but that gives you kind of a perspective, and then you start looking at individual situations. Is it somebody that has a pension that's producing steady cash flow, for the year, and it's dependable, and so they can take more risk on the investment side? Is a 75-year-old investing for themselves purely, or are they thinking about investing for their heirs at this point? So there are a lot of equations that come into play. I think that, if you're thinking about a breakdown in terms of U.S. corporations versus international and small cap, I, on the equity side of a portfolio, to have, 50 to 60% in large cap and maybe, 20 to 30% in small and mid cap, and perhaps an international plug of maybe 10 to 15%. I think those percentages, are ballparky. But again, it really depends on the individual situation. And, those are the sorts of things we try to drill down on with our clients on an individual basis. Question three. With the gyrations of stocks, isn't it better to sell some of the stocks to take some money off the table? Selling is probably the hardest thing there is in an investment program, right? It's difficult because it's hard to, there are a lot of emotions that work against selling in a sense of, nobody wants to sell a loser because you're admitting that it was a bad decision. But on the other hand, holding on to losers is not necessarily a recipe for investment success either, given that we all have only a finite amount of money, and to have that money in our not so favorite ideas is counterproductive to building wealth. So, the best thing to try to do on the sell side is develop a sell discipline that you can implement. And, that can be a lot of different things. And it partly depends on why you bought the investment in the first place. I mean, if you bought the investment in the first place because it was going up, and I know that sounds simple, but there are a lot of people who follow that. In certain market cycles, you can do quite fine buying stocks that are going up. If that's the sole reason why you buy it, then I suppose when the stock starts to go down, that's probably a reason to sell. If you bought a stock because you liked its earnings momentum and its revenue momentum, and that revenue and earnings momentum has now been short-circuited, that's probably a reason to sell the stock. If you bought a stock because you liked its scores in certain rating systems that you use, et cetera, and the scores start to deteriorate, that's certainly a reason to reexamine why you bought it and perhaps a reason to sell. I'm a little reluctant to suggest that if a stock goes up 50%, you should sell half of it and let the other half ride. Is there anything necessarily wrong with that? No. But I think what you'll find in most investor portfolios is that when you look at the stocks through those portfolios and you figure out where you really made your money, it's going to be not on, if your portfolio is 40 stocks, it's not going to be on 39 stocks. It's going to be, you know, five or six stocks that you let run and they turned out to be really, really big winners. And if you're constantly trimming positions in those sorts of stocks, you're not going to capture that. Now, you're not going to go broke either, you know, selling a stock after it goes up 50% and selling half and going forward. And that can be a sell discipline. And I would not necessarily say that's a bad one, but it's just that, again, if you look at a lot of investor portfolios and how they have performed and where the wealth creation has been, you probably are going to find the biggest gains isolated in a number of stocks that just went crazy for you. And if you're constantly trimming those, you're not going to own those sorts of stocks. Next question. With interest rates poised to increase next year, I assume short-term bonds are still okay, right? Certainly, if interest rates are going to be increasing and increasing with vigor, short-term bonds, generally speaking, will be a safer place to be than longer-term bonds. Short-term bonds react less to interest rate movements than long-term bonds. So in an environment of rising interest rates is generally detrimental to bonds. You know, bond values go down, interest rates go up, bond values go down. Interest rates go down, bond values go up, and short-term bonds react less to those movements than long-term. So that's a long-winded way of saying yes. If you're going to expect interest rates to rise and rise sharply, and you are in the fixed income market and you want to be more defensive, short-term probably is going to be better than long-term. Next question. The Dow Jones Industrial Average dropped 169 points this afternoon in just the last hour of trading, ahead of anticipated news about inflation. What do you expect the news will be, and to what effect do you think it will have on those of us with certain stocks? Well, my overall opinion is, you know, we're getting down into pretty macro or micro territory here, trying to figure out from day to day what the inflation story is going to be. And what that does is create a trading mentality, and that typically is not good for anybody. The one point I do want to make, and it wasn't necessarily answering the point that the questioner was asking, but it was a kind of implied with that 169-point drop as being a big drop, implying that it is a significant drop in the market. You know, when I first came to the markets back in 1982, or first started to learn about the markets, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was trading at about 779. 169-point move then was a massive, massive, massive move because it was a huge percentage of the overall value of the Dow Jones Industrial Average. Today, you know, the Dow Jones Industrial Average closed today at 36,319. I think investors need to think, you know, not just in absolute terms, boy, it's 169 points, but what is the percentage term, percentage value of that? And when you start thinking in those levels, given the levels that we are at in the markets these days, you know, what constitutes a big drop, a meaningful something that should get our attention, you know, that has changed. And I'm not convinced 169 points is something that is a telling move in the market. You know, keep in mind, we've had a pretty strong market over the last 2 weeks. I think the S&P had gone up 9 straight days prior to today. So or close to it. So, you know, to give something back is, you know, that's always going to be the ebb and flow in a market. But, you know, try to keep market moves in some perspective, because you know, when you look at the headline, oh my goodness, it's down 169 points, that is not, in the scheme of things, potentially something that's even, you know, I hate to use the word relevant, but it probably isn't relevant, quite honestly. Next question. Uh, I am encouraged to learn that President Biden's infrastructure investment package has been scaled back. Who stands to benefit and who stands to lose with the implementation of this ambitious plan? You know, that remains to be seen. I think, as I mentioned earlier, on the hard, I'll use the term hard infrastructure program, that obviously money will be funneling more toward companies in the construction, in the infrastructure areas. And, you know, they should, you know, at least benefit in terms of increased business. I'm always a little cautious to get too bullish because, again, the market is forward-looking. And I do believe the market had felt that there would be a hard infrastructure bill passed. And so you can make an argument that some, at least, of those benefits are already reflected in those stocks. So I'll go back to my original thought. I don't think it's worth trying to aggressively play certain sectors on the come that they will be beneficiaries of the infrastructure bills. Because again, the market is forward looking and typically it is already reflecting, you know, the pros and cons in those industries that will be impacted by both of the potential bills. Well, I've come to the end of the questions. I appreciate all of you sharing time with me today. I hope that as we go toward the end of the year, the markets continue to be cooperative, and I hope that 2022 is successful for all of you. Again, thank you very much for listening to this latest audio conference, and good luck with your investments. And again, if any of you have any questions or would like more information about Horizon Investment Services and our money management services here, our number here is 800-711-7969. That's 800-711-7969. Thank you.